Hail, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Lindsay Williams. And Lindsay, kind enough to be with us again today. And we've known Lindsay for a number of years, and of course, we'll let him tell you about his experience on the Alaska pipeline. And that, of course, is the fact that recently he has been told that there are certain things he cannot talk about. And, of course, but he is going to tell you what he learned from the people who really run the world about what the future holds. And certainly Lindsay and I had talked about 7 weeks ago, and some of the things he told me at that time just didn't seem possible. But I didn't question what he was saying. I told him to actually call the man who told him, man who was part of this ruling elite, and then make sure that it was all right if he went ahead and brought this information out on the radio. And this is why we have him with us tonight, because this is the most amazing story, and it will begin to shatter everything you believe. So, well, that is the background. Lindsay Williams, thanks so very much for being with us again.
Thank you, Dr. Stan, for allowing me to be with you at such a time as this.
There we are, living in exciting times, aren't we?
Oh, are we living in wonderful days? I am so glad I'm living today. If God had given me a choice, which he didn't, but if he had given me a choice as to all of time when I wanted to live, I would have chosen right now, today, and being right here on this radio show tonight to tell people everything that I was told by one of the people who knows everything that goes on behind the closed doors with the elitists. Everything is going to happen for the next 12 months' time.
All right, well, you go ahead, because I think that, of course, some of the things they told you about the this gigantic oil field that would be discovered, they were going to announce the fact. Now, this was 7 weeks ago, ladies and gentlemen, that Lindsay told me this, that they were going to announce the finding of a massive, massive oil field off the north slope of Russia. And, of course, this is just yesterday. They announced that they had found one of the largest oil fields anywhere in the world. 900 billion barrels of oil is certainly just the other side of the Arctic Circle, which of course is the north slope of Alaska, north slope of Russia. And yet I heard this from Lindsay just 7 weeks ago, and it was yesterday in the afternoon that this was suddenly announced, that they had discovered this massive oil field, and yet Lindsay had told me about it 7 weeks ago. So you go ahead with the entire story. This is truly amazing.
Well, Dr. Stan, it is, and except by the providence of God, I could have never known these things. Recently, about 7 weeks ago, as you've said, I received the most startling phone call that I've ever received in my lifetime. Now, that's saying a lot, but it was. And the person on the other end of the line, I knew them well. I had spent much time with him at Prudhoe Bay, Alaska. He had been in my services. I knew who the person was. And I know and knew that he knew everything that the elitists are going to do. You know, for the past 35 years, Dr. Stan, I have known, that is, since I wrote my book, Energy Non-Crisis, I have known that there's a line out there. And I knew that if I ever crossed it, and said a little bit too much, because there are a lot of things I know that I can't afford to say, but I knew that if I said certain things that I probably would be contacted, and I very seldom ever talk about this and wouldn't accept that that's the subject of the program tonight. Over the past 35 years, twice, I have been told to quit saying certain things. Back in 1984, they called me in, and they said that you can't do this anymore. And at that time, I stopped talking about a certain thing.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go right ahead, Lindsay.
Yeah. And then, of course, 7 weeks ago, it happened again. A different person, of course. And this time, the man said, you can't say this anymore. You can't say this, 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 and this. And he said, you can say this and this if you'd like, but he said, if you continue to say this and this and this, and he named them, point blank, he said, we are going to do this and this and this. And it wasn't very pleasant what they said they were going to do. Now, you just don't argue with these people. And Dr. Sand, you will well remember 7 weeks ago when I called you. You were one of the first people I called after my conversation with this person. The day or two later, I called you on the phone, and I'm sure you must have noticed that I was one frightened individual. And I said, Dr. Sand, here's what's happened to me. And within 24 hours' time, I closed down my website. Now, if anyone in the listening audience doubts anything I'm saying tonight, you know how important a website is to a person that does radio shows like I do, that Dr. Stan does. You go to my website, you'll only see a front page. That's all you'll see there anymore, lwoil.com. I had to close it down. My Energy Non-Crisis DVD, I called up my 800 service and I said, don't sell another one under any circumstances. I don't care how much people want to pay you for it. You are not to sell another Energy Non-Crisis DVD. And I had to pull all of these because they said something about something that they did not want said. Now, I'd rather be able to say some things than to be able to say nothing. And when this individual told me what I could not say any longer or else, I decided I would go along with them, and I did. But that's not the important thing because that's been taken care of. Thanks to Dr. Stan. Yeah, you're exactly right. The wisdom of Dr. Stan Monteith, folks, you better believe, with the wisdom of his age and the wisdom of his Christian experience is amazing. And Dr. Stan said later, he said, Lindsay, why don't you call this individual back and ask him what you can say out of what he told you? Because what he told me after he had said, you can't say this and this, and I agreed with what he said. I agreed immediately. I didn't hesitate to do exactly what they said because, after all, if they can tell the President of the United States of America what to do, if they can dictate to Congress what bills to pass, if they can tell the Arabs what they're going to give them for a barrel of oil on any given day and control the currencies of the world, and if they can take the life of a president of the United States of America, as they did John F. Kennedy years ago, because he went one step too far, I wasn't about to argue with these people. I immediately said, okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Lindsay Williams. And, of course, he's just simply saying that when he got this telephone call from a member of the power elite, and, of course, he realized how powerful they are. They can tell the president what to do, the Congress what bills to pass. They can even kill, as they did, President Kennedy and get away with it back in 1963. Why, of course, what chance did he have? Of course, he didn't have any choice at all. They told him he would not talk about certain things. But, you know, they did tell him a great deal about what the future held. And, of course, when Lindsay and I talked, I suggested, Lindsay, look, I mean, this is an amazing story, but I don't want you to get into any trouble. Why don't you call the gentleman back and ask him if you can put this information out? Because I think the American people need to know, and that's just what Lindsay did. He talked to the gentleman, and the fellow said, sure, go ahead. You're welcome to talk about it because it's going to happen anyway. So you pick the story up there, Lindsay.
Dr. Stan, after I had agreed to do everything that they said, about 24 hours later, since this gentleman had been kind enough to give me his phone number, I called him back and I said, now, I want you to notice that I have done everything you said. He said, yes, you have. And he said, I want to congratulate you. He said, we were going to give you longer than that to do it, but he said, you did it quickly and we appreciate it. He said, now, we are going to keep our word and let you alone. Now, he said, you just go ahead and live life, have a good time. And he said, don't worry about us. He said, you've gone along with what we said. And he said, I promise you, we're going to let you alone. Well, at that point, I noticed that he'd gotten friendly. So I asked him some questions. I said, by the way, I haven't seen you in probably 20, 25 years. How's your wife? Where have you been living? What you've been doing? And we carried on quite a friendly conversation for a few moments, and when I noticed that he was going to be polite, I begun to ask him some questions. And this, Dr. Stan, is where everyone out there in the listening audience tonight, I beg of you, you knew something that happened just yesterday. In fact, you mentioned it on the podcast earlier this afternoon, and just a moment ago you referred to it. And I think that on yesterday, Thursday the 24th, they announced that there is a monstrous oil field that's just been found north of Russia. That is exactly what this man said 7 weeks ago.
Now, Chris, we have to understand that Saudi Arabia has about 230 billion barrels of oil. This is 900 billion barrels of oil, at least that's what they'll admit to it, and maybe a lot more than that. But this is almost four times, or almost three times, of course, the what is up there, and off the north slope of Russia. So you pick up the story there, because when I heard that yesterday, I almost had a cold chill run down my spine to realize that the things that he told you about, not only about the oil fields that are out there they were going to expose, but the fact that, of course, he had told you that the price of oil was going to come down. It was already beginning to drop. But then what he told you about what was going to happen to America was right on. So you go ahead. Do you tell the story?
Well, so that the listening audience will understand, this is not a conspiracy we're talking about tonight. This is an agenda. These people have it planned well in advance. They knew months ago exactly what they were going to do. They discovered these oil fields a long time ago, probably years ago. They have produced them and gotten them ready to bring online, and all of their plans have been a part of an agenda that is a total picture. So, yes, I will begin with what happened. After we carried on a rather polite conversation, I decided I would ask him some questions because I knew he knew what the elite were going to do. And I said, by the way, the price of crude oil is really affecting the American economy, and the price of the gas pump is hurting everybody. I said, where is it going? He said, well, Chaplain, it's going to go a little bit higher. I gathered from what he said, probably by the end of the summer, would go up another dollar before it came back down. It's already beginning to come down some, but I'm not sure this is the end of it. And then he made a statement that I am still sitting here almost shuddering at the statement he made. He said the price of crude oil is going to drop to $50 a barrel. Oh, I could hardly believe what I was hearing. But this goes back to something that happened to me back in 1984 with another whole situation altogether. I'll never forget it. I was sitting in my home in Kosilof, Alaska, and a person called me on the phone one day, and he said the price of crude oil is going to go from where it is today to $10 a barrel. It was $32 a barrel at that time. It did. Within so many weeks, exactly as this elite person had told me, it went to that price. Now, a person very similar to that said this identical same thing this time. He said it's going from where it is today of $143, I think is about the highest it's gone so far. He said it's going to drop to $50 a barrel. I almost shuddered in my shoes to think of it. Immediately my mind began to go to the ramifications of this, and the first thing I wanted to ask him is, how are you going to do it? Now, folks, keep in mind, there is a group of people on the face of the earth who control the world. Dr. Stan has been talking about them for years, and I beg of you to listen to everything that Dr. Stan Monteith says, because he's been trying to tell you these things for a long time, and everything he's saying is truth. And what you're hearing tonight only bears out the fact that this is just one more testimonial of the fact of the existence of these people who control the world. And he said, it's going to $50 a barrel. So I said, how are you going to do this? Are you ready? I hope you have pencils and paper handy. He said, Chaplain, we're going to open up two major oil fields in the world. Now, I knew I'd best ask him where they were, so I did, and he didn't hesitate one moment. It was almost as if he had just been sitting in a board meeting and could have rattled off exactly where they were. He said, there is an oil field in Indonesia and another one north of Russia. That is exactly what the news media said on yesterday. That's correct, eight times bigger than Saudi Arabia. On the news media yesterday, they announced it for the first time. This man told it to me 7 weeks ago, and he said in Indonesia and north of Russia, and this is what he said. He said, you combine these two oil fields, And he said the known reserves available for us to pull out of the ground anytime we wish, he said it is more oil than all of the known reserves in the Middle East. You take Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran, Dubai, every single oil-producing country in the Middle East, and in these two oil fields alone, they have more known reserves of oil than all of the Middle East combined, and he said it is going to take the price of crude oil to $50 a barrel. In other words, they are going to flood the world with crude oil. The first thing that came to my mind is $2 a gallon at the gas pump in the United States of America. That's right. Oh, the American people are going to be dancing in the streets. They're going to say, oh, what a wonderful blessing. We finally have gasoline prices down to $2 to $2.50. And I'm quite sure Mr. George Bush is going to go out of office smelling like a rose if it happens before he does. And this, they have this plan. It's all in the works. On May the 3rd of 08, the CEO of ExxonMobil, now ExxonMobil Oil Company, made more profits last year than any other oil company or any other company in the history of the world. And the CEO of ExxonMobil stated on national news on May the 3rd of 08, quote, crude oil should be $50 a barrel. Listen to their buzzwords. They know exactly what they're going to do, how they're going to do it, and for what reason. But the reason is the part that you are going to find so startling. Now think about something for a moment. Whenever crude oil prices go to $50 a barrel, what is that going to mean to the Middle East? Now think about it for a moment. They have based their economy, and the Middle East, I asked this gentleman this question. I said, by the way, what is this going to do to the Arab countries in the Middle East? He immediately stated to me, and I'll never forget his words, he said, Chaplain, you don't understand the Arab mentality. And he went on for about 15 minutes to lecture me on the mentality of the Arabs and how they live for today and how they carry on their society, get the sheikhs and the sheikhs giving those that are under them everything from schooling to medical to housing to everything imaginable, and they've become some of the wealthiest people on the face of the earth. And when they have based their economy on $145 a barrel, when it goes to $50 a barrel, can you imagine what it's going to do to Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran, what it's going to do to Dubai and all of those oil-producing countries over there? It's going to bankrupt them. So I asked him the question. I said, what is this going to do to the Middle East? Oh, folks, this is so startling. It's almost unbelievable. He said, it's going to, and I'll put it in my words, bankrupt them. Completely put them into a state that is near unbelievable. It is going to devastate the Middle East. Now, think of the ramifications of this. All of a sudden, you see crude oil $50 a barrel. You are going to remember this program tonight because it'll go to $2 to $2.50 a gallon at the gas pump. And when it does, think of something. The rejoicing of the American people. But mark my words, within 4 to 6 weeks' time, you will be begging for $10 to $11 a gallon at the gas pump again. Let me try to explain why. We have a $9 to $10 trillion national debt. That national debt must be paid. The interest on that national debt must be paid for. Who pays for it? It's paid for through the issues of Federal Reserve, T-bills, and notes. And who buys them? Everybody from Russia to Japan to the Arab countries, and when they no longer buy the Federal Reserve issues that monetizes the national debt of the United States of America, what's going to happen to the American dollar? Not only that, but think of all the people who have played the futures market in crude oil, and the price goes to $50 a barrel. Fortunes, billions of dollars of fortunes are going to be lost. Think of something else. All of these countries have used the American dollar for years, as long as anybody can remember, as their reserve currency.
Hold that thought there. We'll be back in just a moment here with Lindsay Williams as we describe what the future holds. Go right ahead, Lindsay.
And whenever they no longer can use the American dollar as their reserve currency, now remember, a reserve currency is something that you keep for a rainy day. You have a savings account down at the bank. And hope it's in the bank, by the way, that's not failing. And you, as a result, you just keep it there. Because there may be a day when you lose your job or you have a bad day or something happens. You need a reserve currency. Well, nations of the world have a reserve currency, too. And they've always used the American dollar because they could depend on it up until recently. All of a sudden, crude oil goes to $50 a barrel. They have to dump their reserve currencies. They have to put it on the market. They have to sell it. They have to get rid of it. Do anything in order to be able to maintain the position of the sheikhs and sheikhs that rule over the people in these Arab countries. Do you realize that 100 years ago, the Arabs were nothing but nomads roaming the deserts riding camels? And the American oil companies went in there, found the oil, said, we'll produce it. We turned around and bought it. The rest of the world began to buy it. They became the richest people on the face of the earth. And do you realize that they are going to be now the poorest people on the face of the earth? Exactly where they were 75 to 100 years ago when the price of crude oil goes to $50 a barrel. But that's not the part that affects you and me so much here in America as the fact that when they dump the American dollar as their reserve currency, when all of a sudden they no longer buy our T-bills and purchase our national debt, you realize what's going to happen to the American dollar? And this is what I said a moment ago. This is now my opinion personally. I think within probably 4 to 6 weeks' time, you are going to see a total collapse of the American dollar.
You're talking about 4 to 6 weeks of the time that, of course, the price of oil goes down to $50 a barrel.
That's right. From the time that it goes down to $50 a barrel and they no longer can keep their reserve currencies in American dollars, they no longer can buy our national debt, from that point, I'm predicting somewhere in the neighborhood of 4 to 6 weeks, you are going to see a total collapse of the American dollar. Now, what's it going to do to the Arab world? I asked this gentleman this at this point. He said it is going to destroy the Middle East. Literally destroy the Middle East economy. That beautiful city they're building over in Dubai. And then he said it. Oh. He said, Iran is really bothering us. I said, what do you mean? He said, Iran is becoming the richest nation on the face of the earth. I said, because of their oil bores or their oil bank? And he said, yes, and the fact that other countries are joining them and selling crude oil using other things besides the American dollar. He said, Iran must be stopped. But right now, I know most everyone has thought that we're going to war with Iran, and we may. And Israel may invade Iran. I'm not saying they won't, but they have a plan to bankrupt Iran. That's correct. Taking the price of crude oil to $50 a barrel will utterly destroy the Iranian economy. Why go to war with them when you can destroy them economically and destroy their oil bores by taking the price to $50 a barrel? And do you realize what condition this is going to put the Middle East in? And at that point, he said something else that was so startling. He said, Ann Chaplin, he said, John McCain is our man. He said, we want to get him in as president. I thought, what are they going to do? So I asked, I said, well, are you going to take the price of crude oil to $50 a barrel just before the election? He would not answer that question. He wouldn't say yes. He wouldn't say no.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Lindsay. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Lindsay was simply pointing out that about, you know, within the 6 weeks of the time that oil hits $50 a gallon, $50 a barrel, why, of course, you're going to see real problems as far as the countries of the Middle East are concerned, and even more than that, they're not going to have their money to be able to come over here and buy up our treasury bills, and they hold a lot of treasury bills. In fact, they're probably going to have to start liquidating those, and then where are we going to get the money to stabilize our society? We are having to borrow $2 billion to $2.5 billion a day just to pay our debts. And, of course, the only thing they could do other than that is just keep printing more money and destroying the value of everything you have. So, certainly, and then, of course, the Middle East were to collapse financially. Why, and certainly the rest of the world is having very real problems. Europe, Asia, they're all having economic problems. China. Why, of course, all of these countries could begin dumping their dollars. And we would simply have the collapse of our economic system as a result of that. You pick up the story there, Lindsay.
On, let's see, the date was June the 2nd. of 08, June the 2nd of this year, the retired CEO of Shell Oil said in the Wall Street Journal, now you can look this up for yourself, you can find it in the archives, he said, quote, America must have a new energy policy. Now, to me, that was a buzzword. To the average person, they would say, oh, we are going to produce oil from America's soil. Watch out. No, they aren't. They have no intentions whatsoever of opening up any American oil fields. I know you've been hearing a lot about it. That huge new oil find in Montana, Alaska is just flowing with oil that they know is there, and the federal government will not allow it to be produced. They are not going to open up any American oil fields. Now, mark my words, I know they'll probably pass a few bills, go before Congress to make you think that they're trying to do it, and at the last minute, every one of those bills will fail. Just mark my words, you'll see it, because this gentleman said, no. He said, we are going to open up other oil fields in the world, not in the United States of America. He said, we're going to produce from these huge oil fields in Indonesia and north of Russia. And by the way, just announced on yesterday, north of Russia. Mark my words, you'll see the one announced in Indonesia before very long. And when they open them, they'll have no reason for American oil whatsoever, and the American people will not push for it any longer. Here's what's going to happen. We will be kept dependent on foreign oil from this day forward. They have no intention whatsoever of opening up any major American oil fields. Now, watch what's going to happen. Just prior to the election, he didn't say what, and he would not say that they were going to take it to $50 a barrel just before the election in November, but he did indicate that something big is going to happen just before the November election. I don't know what it is, and he wouldn't tell me. But he said, undoubtedly, something big is going to happen about that point in order to assure that they get their man in Washington. Now, you say, do you mean they have this much control? You better believe they have this much control. These people know what they're doing. The ramifications of all of this are so catastrophic and devastating to the American dollar, you realize that this will give them an opportunity to bring in the North American Union, to issue a new currency. When the American dollar collapses and they bring it about, you mean they have the power to do this? Yes, they do. They have a power to collapse the American dollar and cause the American people to want another currency. And when $50 a barrel oil comes around, we are going to beg again for high-priced oil so the rest of the world could buy our national debt that we've gotten ourselves into. But it's too late then because the dollar will have already collapsed. And then I asked the question. I couldn't help it. I said, now, what can America expect from this point on? I said, we've talked about $50 a barrel oil. We've talked about the ramifications of this and what's going to happen to the dollar and who you want is the next president of the United States of America and where you're going to open up the oil fields in the world, and you're not going to open up American oil fields. I said, in light of all of these things, folks, do you realize that none of these things have been considered by the average person? I never even thought of these things. There's no way that I could have thought up an oil field that large north of Russia.
Well, what basically did he say was going to happen in the United States?
He said, America will see a financial condition that will be so severe, it will take years for it to ever come out of it.
So severe, it'll take years to come out of it. Ladies and gentlemen, I think that this is exactly what lies ahead. We're going to see terrible financial times. We've been trying to warn you, but here's somebody from the other side who is actually making the statement. And, of course, if I hadn't actually talked to Lindsay, it was 7 weeks ago, and heard this and heard about this massive oil field up off the north slope of Russia and up there in the Arctic Ocean, why, I'd say, well, is it true? I have no question in my mind that it is. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and so basically as your friend there, we will not mention his name, tells you these things, this must have really been really startling for you, talking about the destruction of our economic system as we've known it.
Well, Dr. Stan, in your wisdom, you said something to me that day when I called you and I was so desperate. And you said, Lindsay, why don't you call this gentleman back and ask him what you can say? I did. And I went over each of these items and I said, would it be proper for me to say that Lindsay Williams, and of course he said, don't you dare use my name. I said, no. I said, would it be possible for me to say Lindsay Williams thinks that these things are going to happen? And, you know, I'll put it in my words, if I may. It's almost as if he said, well, it's going to happen anyway. What difference does it make? Now, he put it in much more precise words than that, but that basically was what he said. So, Dr. Stan, it's all because of you that I have the permission to be on your radio program tonight. I sat there for 5 weeks' time and didn't do a single radio show. I was scared. I must admit, and I didn't take a single speaking engagement for those 5 weeks. And finally, I said, I think I will try and see if everything's going to be okay. And I did. I've just finished producing a DVD. It's entitled The Next 12 Months. I don't know how to put it except to say that if you'd like to know what they, the elite, have planned for America and the world for the next 12 months, right from one of their people who knows everything that's going on, I've tried to put it all to the best that I could in a DVD. Now, I say some things that I haven't said on the program tonight. And not only that, but I go into the background of all of this. What are they doing with the airlines of America? How about the banks of America? What about this housing crisis? How does all of this fit into it? The foreclosures, Fannie Mae, Fannie Mac, Bear Stearns, all of these things. How does all of this fit into it? Every bit of it fits into the picture. I urge you. I have produced a new Energy Non-Crisis DVD also. It's entitled 2008 Energy Update. I had to take a few things out because they wouldn't allow me to say them anymore. But I put a lot of other things in. I urge you, for the sake of your dinner table and your friends, and you can show that to them, a DVD, watch it on your television. The number is 800-321-2900.
I want you to hold that right there for just a minute as we bring... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Lindsay is just saying that he has actually produced a new DVD. It's called The Next 12 Months, or What's Going to Happen in the Next 12 Months, and really putting out exactly the things he told me 7 weeks ago that he had been told by this man who represents the power elite of the world. And certainly it's an amazing story. I've seen the DVD, and I think people really need to understand what's happening. And then he's actually produced another, the Energy Non-Crisis DVD. He's had to take certain things out of it. He's can put in other things, but he's had to remove certain things that he was just warned he was not to be allowed to say anymore. And you say, well, I mean, after all, I mean, people can't tell an American what to do. And I will tell you, quite frankly, sometimes you get an offer you can't refuse. Have you ever wondered why Jack Ruby actually went into the Parklands police station there in Texas, and shot Lee Harvey Oswald? Well, I'll tell you why. Because he was told by the members of the mafia who were working with the CIA that he would be tortured to death and every member of his family would be tortured to death unless he walked into the station and killed Lee Harvey Oswald. How do we know that? Well, because the brother of the head of the man who made the offer that Jack Ruby couldn't refuse, a man named Sam Giancana, gave the offer, and of course his brother Chuck Giancana wrote the book. It's called Double Cross. It's still available on the internet, explaining why these things happened. We're dealing with ruthless people, very ruthless people. I've personally interviewed at least three professional assassins hired by one or another division of our government to kill people. One of them was supposed to kill Ross Perot. He wouldn't do it, and recently his body washed up on the shores somewhere in the Caribbean, an island in the Caribbean. His name was Chip Tatum. We actually have our interviews with him. This is the reality of what's going on. Well, anyway, Lindsay has put together an excellent DVD, and then another one called The Energy Non-Crisis, which covers a great deal of the story, but certain things are not in that. Lindsay, how can people get in touch with you and get your two new DVDs?
Well, Dr. Stan, we only have a few hundred of Energy Non-Crisis books left. Whenever I get through with these few that we have, I won't be reprinting. I have no plans to reprint. I understand that on Google right now, they're charging something like $190 for one copy of Energy Non-Crisis. Utterly ridiculous. But we only got a few left. Now, I will give you a copy of Energy Non-Crisis. With my 8-set DVDs of all the things that we try our best to tell you, what's happening to the American farmer? The number is 800-321-2900. Now, if you only wish to get my new DVD on the next 12 months and the new Energy Non-Crisis DVD, I'll give you a copy of You Can Live. But we're so short on Energy Non-Crisis until my 800 service said tonight, Lindsay, we've got, Dr. Stan, so many people called as a result of your afternoon show today until their operators were literally exhausted tonight. I don't know whether you can even get through on the telephones or not. But I beg of you, call 800-321-2900. Ask for the free survival guide. We will give it to you as a gift. I will give as a gift a copy of my book, Energy Non-Crisis. When you get my 8 DVD set, I will give you a copy of my book, You Can Live, with the 2 DVDs entitled The Next 12 Months and the one, Energy Non-Crisis. And again, you may have to call on Monday because they were so tired tonight when I called in. They may not be there on tomorrow and Sunday, but the number is 800-321-2900. And understand that I am only telling you what the one of the knowledgeable people that knows what goes on behind closed doors, what he told me. This is not the opinion of Lindsay Williams. This is what this gentleman actually told me that they have planned that's in store from the $50 a barrel oil, which is will change the face of the earth, to the oil fields they're going to open up, to what's going to happen to the American economy. I give details of this as to what will take place in the future in the United States of America if the elitists have their way. And, of course, don't underestimate their power and know that this positively is not a conspiracy. It is an agenda. So, folks, in light of all of this, set your spiritual house in order. I beg of you, if ever in your life you went to the Word of God and read John 3:16 and Romans 10:8 through 13 and Ephesians 2:8 and 9, if ever in your life you went and believed what is said in the Bible and set your house on a spiritual rock, I beg of you to do it. I mean, even tonight, even right now, this moment, don't wait any longer. Set your spiritual house in order because they have plans for you. Plant a garden. Get ready for the inevitable. You need to make some plans. Get our survival guide that's free of charge, whether you get my DVDs or not. Get out of debt. Now, Dr. Stan, you suggested earlier this afternoon on the program to get out of debt. Folks, Dr. Stan is so wise there. Do anything in your power to pay off your credit card, to pay off your house, get out of debt. Anything that they can take, they'll get it free of charge. All they have to do is just repossess that house when the mortgage hasn't been paid for 3 months. Listen to their buzzwords because they will tell you in advance what they're going to do, just as did the CEO of ExxonMobil on national news when he said crude oil should be $50 a barrel. He was actually telling you what they're going to do, but he didn't tell you how they were going to do it. It took someone like this man that called me in order to tell us how they're going to do it. Politicians, they're all bought. Maybe there's one or two like Ron Paul up there that's not. But they're bought out, paid for. They're going to pass the bills that the elitists won't pass, and Washington will do just exactly what they want. And it was very obvious that when this gentleman was talking to me, that every one of these things were planned in order, and they know exactly which way they're going, Dr. Stan, and it's just the direction in which you have been telling people on these programs for years. You've been telling them the truth. And it's time now to believe it, because it was national news on yesterday that they just opened up an oil field that this man told me about 7 weeks ago.
And, of course, it's probably, well, by far the largest oil field in the world. There's more oil there than is at all of certainly of the Near East. And when you stop and think that Saudi Arabia supposedly has 230 billion barrels of oil, and this one field that they're talking about, just one of the two fields that they know of, has 900 billion barrels of oil. You can begin to understand the enormity of what we're talking about. Now, what did he specifically tell you about the economy of the United States and what was going to happen to our economy and how long it would last?
There was something that he kept repeating over and over that I thought was so significant. I asked him, I said, what's going to happen to America in all light of all of this? He said, America will see a financial collapse that is going to be so severe that it will take years for it to come out of it. And after that, we talked for probably another 15 minutes about this subject and other subjects, and he kept repeating over and over. And, of course, these people very seldom repeat something twice. But he kept saying it over and over and over. It will take years for the economy of America to come out of this financial collapse.
And I think that's really what's so very, very important, ladies and gentlemen. If you think that we're going to have a little dip in the economy, it's going to be there for 6 months or a year, and then everything's going to go back the way it was before, and we're all going to live happily ever after, you are living in a fool's world. We are going into terrible, terrible times. That's why whatever means you have to do, utilize, get out of debt, prepare yourself for difficult times, financially and physically, but also spiritually, as Lindsay says, because behind everything going on, I can tell you after studying this for 46 years, behind everything going on, behind the gentleman who called Lindsay Williams and are powerful spiritual forces that are really, and of course, the one thing they would love to do is destroy this country, because we were once a Christian nation. We were the Christian bulwark of the world. We were providing missionaries to the whole world, and there's one thing these people hate with an intensity, or at least the forces that control them hate immensely, and that, of course, is Christianity, and of course, the two branches, both the Catholic and the Protestant Church. So, and they're going out to get them, and they're out to destroy Judaism as well, and they're doing a pretty good job of it, because they've infiltrated our churches, and of course, they've changed the music in our churches. Have you noticed how they've changed the music in the churches? Have you noticed how they've changed the message of the church? And now it's sort of a feel-good sort of gospel, and how to get along with your husband, and your wife and your employer, and how to feel good about yourself. But, of course, the real message of the Scriptures, that we're all sinners saved by grace, is very seldom mentioned. Well, Lindsay, of course, certainly you did the program on Butch Palm. We did a program on Monday. Did you get a good response to those?
Oh, my goodness, Dr. Stan, it was amazing. The day that I did the program with Brother Butch Paul, and likewise with you, the following day, I could not even get through to my 800 service. All day long, the lines were busy. And finally, they called me later in the day, and they said, all of our lines, and they have three operators that go all day long, from 10 o'clock in the morning till 6 in the evening. All day long, their lines were busy because people are so hungry. You know what we finally came up with? I asked our 800 service operator. I said, why do you think people are wanting to get this information so desperately? They said, it seems that everyone wants to know what's going to happen tomorrow. They're scared to death.
And I think they should be scared to death, but of course you have to look at this philosophically. If you live in fear, you can't be effective. And they want to frighten us to death. They're playing games with our minds all the time. In fact, there's a new program on NBC. I think it's called Ultimate Fear or something like that, indoctrinating your mind with fear. Remember that everything is controlled. The television stations are controlled. The message there is to get you so frightened you can't think effectively and of course, act effectively in opposing this organized evil which is upon us, and we're not going to be able to do anything. Congress is not going to do anything to stop this economic collapse. This latest bill that they just put through to save housing is the most ridiculous thing in the world. Part of that, of course, involves fingerprinting everybody working in the mortgage industry. Now, many people in the audience honestly believe that we have the current problems, as far as the collapsing housing market, because we weren't fingerprinting the people who work in the mortgage industry in the past. And, of course, everything, every sale that you do with a credit card Everything is to be reported to the Internal Revenue Service. How many of you in the audience honestly think that the reason we have the collapse of the housing market is because the IRS didn't have enough information about us? Every credit card transaction henceforth will be reported in great detail to the Internal Revenue Service. This is all in the legislation that's being enacted to try to address the housing crisis. And, of course, how are they going to do it? They're going to start printing money. They don't have any money to spend. So they just print more money and destroy, erode the value of your currency. And I think that what Lindsay says and what he was told is absolutely true. They're going to destroy our currency. They're going to destroy our savings, our insurance policies, our pension funds, our savings, our CDs, our annuities. Everything we have denominated in dollars is going to be destroyed. And they know exactly what they're doing. Because, of course, once the people are impoverished, then they'll be able to control us. Well, Lindsay, certainly, I'm so glad and so pleased that you're getting a tremendous response to our programs and to Bush Pause programs, and I hope many of you will be on a number of other programs. I know other people are calling and wanting to get your telephone number so they can put you on their programs, and I'm just so glad that you were actually given permission to tell this. These people are so arrogant, they don't care what you know what's going to happen. They believe there's nothing you can do to stop it. And, of course, nothing you and I can do can stop it, but God could. And if we're true to him, of course, we're worthy of his intervention, he will intervene because God does intervene in the affairs of men. Don't you believe?
Yes, Dr. Stan. And so that every person out there in the listening audience can at least decide what you would like to do in light of what their plans are, I beg of you, the next 12 months, 1-800-321-2900. And if you have trouble getting through tonight, please try on Monday. I apologize. We're close to the weekend. 800-321-2900. Now, I must warn you, when the Energy Non-Crisis books run out, we will not be reprinting, and we just have a few more. So if you'd like them, be sure and give a call. Ask for our survival guide. You know, I wouldn't guarantee, for 35 years, Dr. Stan, I've been out here telling people these things. Talk show hosts have said to me lately, Lindsay, you were the first person that ever came up and said that the price of gasoline was going over $3 a gallon. And I said, no, I didn't say it. The elite told me this a long time ago. And I've tried for 35 years to warn the American people, just as you have, Dr. Stan, that all of these things are going to take place. I don't know how much longer I might keep on warning because, I'm getting up there. I'm kind of like you, Dr. Stan. You and I are not far from each other, being the same age. And I'd like to get back in the ministry again. And when you go to my website, you'll realize that may just be what our family does before long. But either way, I wanted to be able to, if I possibly could, tell the American people one more time, by the providence of God, how I happened to come across this material as to the plans of the elite for the next 12 months.
And, of course, I think there's going to be a devastating period of time for everyone who's listened to this program and for everybody in the United States. In fact, for the entire world. The entire world is beginning to implode. Suddenly they're having tremendous problems with inflation and cutting back on the economy over in China. And, of course, the Chinese people have these great expectations. And suddenly they are going to see their dreams, their hopes for a better life shattered. This is happening in Malaysia. It's happening in Europe. As their economy begins to contract, they're having problems over in Japan. Their exports are down and their imports are up. This is a worldwide phenomenon. But, of course, it's all been created by the United States, which has been exporting our fiat currency all throughout the world. And one of these days, all the currency that's being held by other countries, the trillions of dollars held by China and Japan and by the Arab countries and Europe, it's all going to come flooding back in here. And you can say sayonara to your American currency. That's a great tragedy, and people have no idea what lies ahead. That's why I think your DVD is so vitally important. I've seen it, and I certainly recommend that people get the information and begin to understand that, of course, these things are planned by people who have a different worldview, in my opinion, because they worship a different God. Well, Lindsay,
Dr. Stan, you will especially appreciate this man's last statements. And toward the end of our conversation, I said, now, I must tell you that, honestly, our family has considered going back into the ministry. So as I said, I've been at this for so many years. And he said, Chaplain, you did a great job for us up at Prudhoe. He said, we appreciated it. And he said, I wish you the best in what you're planning on doing. He said, for your sake and ours both, I think that would be a wise decision. And he said, God bless you in your work.
Well, I think that...
You know, you're reminded me so much of George Bush. God bless America. And at the same time, he does all the things he's doing. The mentality of these people, you have to understand, is quite different than, Dr. Sand, what you and I think.
Well, because they have a different worldview. And until people understand, there really are people out there who do look at the world differently. And as I said earlier, the reason why is because they can say, God bless you, but they worship a different God. Well, Lindsay, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, Dr. Stan, I think the best way that we could wrap up a program this important would be to give God all the glory. Because, you see, there's no way in the world I could have ever come across this material had it not been for the fact that years ago I went to Alaska as a missionary. And just after going there, they said that 25,000 pipeliners were going to converge on the state to build that Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. I went to Alyeska Pipeline Service Company and said, don't you need a chaplain on the pipeline? And for 3 years' time, by the providence of God, and there's no way in this world that a little insignificant, unknown missionary could have sat with the elite of the world for 3 years' time and lived with them on their own oil field at the big oil field at Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, except by his providence. And then, 35 years later, for me to have a phone call that to most people would seem very startling, but I had no difficulty whatsoever agreeing with this gentleman immediately. And then being able to tell America today what they have planned for the next 12 months' time. And I must say, I have to give God all the glory for the fact that this is not Lindsay Williams. This is not something that I had the knowledge of. But it's something that by the providence of God I was allowed to know so that I could, if at all possible, warn those who are willing to believe. And the scripture says, ye shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. It doesn't say, and the truth shall scare you to death. So don't lose any sleep over this. Don't let it upset you to the point that you get all nervous and excited and you know, do things that are wrong. Instead, plan out what type of lifestyle you want. Listen to what Dr. Stan has to say day after day, because he'll give you updates on these things as it all unfolds. And as you see it, you will go back and say, thank you, Lord, for allowing us to have some knowledge so that in turn we could do something about the lifestyles that we feel we should live in pastors and churches. For goodness sakes, listen to this. If anybody in the world is going to be affected, it's the missionaries and the pastors of America. And so I'm trying my best by the providence of God to tell you there is positively a group of people who have an agenda, not a conspiracy, but an agenda, just as you've heard Dr. Stan talk about so many years. Dr. Stan?
All right, fine. Well, we're just going to wait just a moment. We're going to bring other stations on board, and then I want you to give your telephone number up one more time, because I think it's vitally important that people do have this information and make the plans exactly as you said. Hold there. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, as you know, Lindsay and I do talk during the breaks, and if you'd like to get a tape of the entire program, you can contact us. But Lindsay, one more time, please get out your telephone number so people can get in touch with you.
The number is toll-free. It's 800-321-2900, and may I beg you, if you have trouble getting through, as I've even had trouble doing today because I was on with Dr. Stan earlier during the day and I had trouble even getting through.
Will they be available tomorrow or not, Saturday?
I doubt that they will. They were so tired this afternoon. But 800-321-2900 and call on Monday if you happen not to get through on Saturday.
Well, God bless you, Lindsay. Thanks very much, and please keep in touch with us.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night. Bye-bye. Well, I hope you've enjoyed our interview with Lindsay Williams. He's a very courageous individual and totally dedicated to the Lord and getting the information out, because he's trying to educate people about what's happening, and of course, what's happening monetarily fits to what parallels what's happening spiritually. In fact, the force behind all of this are powerful spiritual and evil forces. When you understand that, so much of what's going on makes sense. Now, we do offer certainly an interesting DVD. It's the original story, that one of the original tapes that Lindsay did, called The Energy Non-Crisis, a DVD. Very well done. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set, interviews with Lindsay, and it's called The Oil Deception. We interview other people as well, pointing out that this whole peak oil business is a scam. It has always been a scam, and it still is a scam. There's no shortage of oil anywhere in the world. And, of course, they can make you believe whatever they want to. They can make you believe that all the ice up in the Arctic and the ocean is going to melt, and, of course, then it's going to flood the city of New York. But, well, New York hasn't flooded yet, and it's not going to flood. It's all a lie, but it doesn't matter what the truth is. If they tell a lie often enough, people will believe. And that's the great tragedy of today. Well, anyway, of course, you have an opportunity of getting the information. Let me suggest you go to my website, radioliberty.com, pull down our September and October 2005 newsletters. September and October 2005 newsletters. And you can read them there. They're called Peak Oil 1 and Peak Oil 2, and they will simply give you the documentation of what we knew several years ago and 3 years ago about the abundance of oil in the world, about, of course, this latest story of this massive oil find off the North Slope of Alaska. And, of course, suddenly Lindsay was telling me about this 7 weeks ago, and just yesterday why they made the announcement. And it changed the dynamics of the oil situation worldwide. But that's not going to save our economy. Our economy is going into the tank. Our currency is going to be destroyed. If you haven't, of course, heard my talk on the financial tsunami, we gave it several years ago, but it is just as accurate today. And there's a DVD that goes, there's a DVD, and of course, a syllabus goes with that, explaining why all of these forces are coming together, confluent at the same time. And, of course, this devastating effect is going to have on our economy. And, of course, you have to understand what they really want to do is to impoverish the American people, to destroy our economy, and, of course, to steal what you've worked your whole life for. And, of course, this is covered in the Global Biodiversity Assessment. You can get a copy of that in our Sustainable Development Syllabus. And in the Earth Charter, and we'll send you a free copy of the Earth Charter if you get anything else from us. You just ask for it, the Earth Charter. You can also pull it down up on the Internet. We hope you want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. We hope you want to get my talk on the Forbidden Secret. The Forbidden Secret and the syllabus goes with that. My talk on secret knowledge, an answer to Rhonda Byrne's The Secret, which has been featured on Oprah Winfrey and on Larry King, and tells you that there is a secret force you can tap into, and you can have whatever you want. And she's absolutely right. But you don't want to tap into that force because it'll cost you your eternal soul. And then, of course, my telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com. Please pray for America, but pray for revival because it's a spiritual battle. Pray for our leaders, pray for our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be those of William Greig, who's certainly one of our favorite guests. William formerly was the senior editor of the New American Magazine, and at the present time, he works with the Welch Foundation. He edits their blog. He appears on other radio programs, but we always look forward to having him right here on Radio Liberty every Friday evening. William, thank you very much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, I'm grateful to be with you again. My offspring will cooperate this evening by being a little more. You can probably hear them in the background.
I can, but don't worry about it. You go right ahead.
Yeah, I was hoping to be a little more restrained than usual, but it's good to be with you again this evening. And we have to talk about the economy and just about every other subject that we would address with respect to the all-encompassing assault on individual liberty is connected to the economy, because I believe, and I think you believe as well, that at root, of course, we're dealing with a spiritual struggle. We're dealing with people who see man differently because they have a different concept of God and a different religious commitment and different religious vision for organizing the world. But one of the first manifestations of that conflict of spiritual visions is the question of the economy, which is to say, how is wealth earned, how is wealth managed, and to what end is wealth devoted? And there are basically two ways, as far as I can tell, only two ways that you can conduct human transactions in the economic realm. The one way is through voluntary, mutually beneficial commerce, where you have buyers and sellers or people engaged in barter involving goods and services in exchange for something of value. This takes place voluntarily, it is mutually beneficial, and it takes place in a way that is equitable. That's voluntary exchange. The other is an exchange that takes place through some form of fraud or coercion. That is to say, either somebody deceives one party or the other in that transaction, or somebody uses the exercise of force, the threat of force, in order to compel one party or another to be involved in that transaction against that person's fully informed will and consent. And, of course, if you're talking about voluntary exchange of goods and services in a way that's mutually beneficial, that's free market enterprise, or what's now called capitalism, although it wasn't called capitalism until relatively recently. And the other, of course, could be some kind of crime, could be some kind of fraud perpetrated by people in the private sphere, or more commonly, that's what government does. All government is the exercise of force or the threat of force, either overt or implicit. And so you have to talk about the economy. That's basically the science of human action, having to do with the maintenance of the physical body and the resources and talents that we've been given by our Creator. And what's happening right now is that because our economy for the last several generations, beginning primarily in 1913, although there was a prelude to that of several decades, since 1913 our economy has been rooted entirely on the exercise of fraud backed up by force. What is called the full faith and credit of the United States government is nothing more or less then the exercise of force, usually implicit but often quite overt, to get people to participate in an economy that is entirely rigged on fraud. And the fundamental fraud here is encapsulated in this maleficent entity we call the Federal Reserve, which is the official counterfeiter for the regime headquartered in Washington, the de facto central banker of the world, and the de facto taxing authority for the entire globe right now, that the script that it issues, that instrument of debt called the dollar, is considered the world's reserve currency, and all central bankers who are part of the dollar system have to harmonize their policies with the Fed. The Federal Reserve is the de facto taxing authority for the world. That's something that was verified.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. William, go right ahead.
This is something that was verified just, oh, I don't know, about a week and a half or so ago, during Ben Bernanke's most recent congressional testimony. Mr. Bernanke, of course, is the chairman of the Federal Reserve. And periodically he goes to Congress in order to decant whatever lies and misrepresentations are required in order to keep this system going. And, of course, as he was doing so, he had the terrible misfortune of running smack into this buzzsaw of reality called Representative Ron Paul, who got Ben Bernanke on the record as admitting that inflation is a tax. And what Ron Paul was saying, of course, this is something that is perfectly self-evident to anybody who's got even a remedial understanding of the subject, and I wouldn't claim anything more than a remedial understanding of the subject, is that because the Federal Reserve is involved in nothing more or less than currency inflation, it is the biggest taxing entity in the world, and Ben Bernanke is the chairman of the Federal Reserve System, is the biggest taxer in the country. And, of course, Ron Paul could have elaborated on that thought by saying that he's basically the chief taxation agent of the entire world. Bernanke conceded the premise, conceded the reality of the fact that inflation is a tax. And then, of course, he tried to find some way of distancing himself from responsibility for this by saying inflation is too high, that's a tax rate that is too high. That's, of course, an observation and a concession, an admission against interest that really should have been examined further, and I'm sure it will be because Representative Paul is very tenacious on these subjects. But the Federal Reserve is involved, of course, in counterfeiting and taxation through counterfeiting, through the adulteration of the currency. It's one of the oldest games in the world. It goes back as far as there have been coins circulated as currency, as far back as there have been rulers who have minted coins. Coins have been adulterated through chipping, through shaving, through the debasement of the materials used in the coinage. That's how the Roman denarius, which started out as the imperial currency back in the last couple of centuries before the Christian era. By the end of the empire, in the 5th century of the Christian era, it had lost 99% of its value through adulteration. It had practically no silver in it by the time the Romans were finished as the dominant power on earth. And of course, we've essayed the same trajectory here in the American empire, the dollar losing over 95% of its value since the Federal Reserve began operation in 1913.
You know, I think it's really very interesting. Nobody ever talks about the fact that in about 300 A.D., why they split the Roman Empire into the East and the West, mm-hmm. and the West, of course, was in Rome, the East was in Constantinople, and that became the Byzantine mm-hmm. Empire, and they maintained a gold-backed currency.
Mm-hmm.
They lasted for 1,000 years after the Western branch of course, the Roman Empire was destroyed. A stable currency, a gold-backed currency, is really the key to the preservation of a society, and our leaders know that. That's why they, of course, have done away with gold as the foundation, why they're going to destroy our currency. We go right ahead there, or we're already go right ahead with him.
Yeah, that's a very important point. You're right, I'm remiss in pointing out that the empire did become bifurcated, and the Western Empire ended sometime just a few decades after 410 AD, when Emperor Honorius was suddenly finding himself hip-deep in Visigoths, and the Eastern Empire, the Byzantine Empire, lasted until, I believe, what 1540?
About 1400.
They were wiped out by Sultan Mehmed II. And the Byzantine Empire, of course, was the residuum of everything that the Roman Empire had accomplished in terms of law and commerce and science, and the preservation of the Christian forms of social organization. That was something that the Byzantium had been they were the preservation of that. They were the continuation of it, rather. And the thing that you point out with respect to the indispensable necessity of a stable currency that is rooted in something that has what is regarded to be innate value, gold or silver, has a lot to do with the fact that the Byzantine Empire lasted for as long as it did. And, of course, these are things that most people know and most people have learned at some point. The people who are running the government that rules us, they're certainly well aware of these facts. And what they're doing right now is they're consummating the destruction of the dollar, and it's taking place really in real time. It's not quite as dramatic or as precipitous a decline as what we see with respect to the Zimbabwean dollar, which is a subject we advert to practically every time you and I have a conversation, Dr. Stan, because really that's the portrait of Dorian Gray here of the American dollar. Zimbabwe has been ruled for decades now by this demented diseased maniac of Marxist persuasion by the name of Robert Mugabe, who was inflicted upon that country when it was just being renamed Zimbabwe after being Rhodesia for decades. Actually, I believe it became a republic very briefly before it was turned over to the hands of the Marxists. But Rhodesia had been well-governed as far as relative to any other country on the continent of Africa and most countries in Europe. Rhodesia was free and prosperous, and it was progressive in the sense that people were blessed with the opportunity to improve their social standing, their economic condition, irrespective of whether they were white or black. You had a white minority and a black majority. You had none of the racial strife that one would expect in the region. And this model of economic cooperation and political amity was ruthlessly crushed by Washington and London, and with the help of the Soviet Union, they ended up with Robert Gabe running that government, running it to the ground, running up a huge, hugely profligate government now that has completely destroyed the value of their currency. They just recently issued a $500 billion note, a circulatable $500 billion Zimbabwean dollar note that can buy four oranges at current prices. I mean, that's probably no longer the case. That was several days ago when I read that news item, so now no doubt the Zimbabwean dollar is radically depreciated even more.
I'll never forget when I first heard that they had a 100,000% a year inflation. Now they have 2.5 million% inflation.
It's just absolutely inconceivable. But the thing that I keep telling people whenever I have a conversation of this sort, rather, with people outside of my daily work as a writer and commentator, I keep saying, look, the United States government is the biggest debtor government in the entire world. The fundamentals for a Zimbabwean-style currency crash exist here in the United States. If you want to know what our future could look like, and may God preserve us from this outcome, but if you want to know what it could look like, take a look at Zimbabwe, because if we were to see this process of exporting inflation that has been going on now for decades, where we basically export our inflation overseas through the connivance of other central banks in the system that I described, if that were to go into reverse, I don't really see anything that would preserve us from a dollar collapse here somewhere near as dramatic as what's gone on in Zimbabwe. The logic of the situation is pretty much the same. And right now you have a situation over in Zimbabwe where nobody has any security of persons or property, and where people have to be constantly acquiring greater gross amounts of this debauched paper currency in order to buy the necessities, which are simply not available. And this was a country that had been the breadbasket of Africa. It had been a food exporter. It had produced not only enough to sustain a very high standard of living in that country, I think it had the highest standard of living in that continent for a long time, but it exported food to Africa and to Europe and to much of the world. And now you have a situation where all the farms have been despoiled. They've been turned over by that central government to cronies of Robert Mugabe and his ruling clique. You've got pandemic violence and terror. You've got a currency that is completely useless. And you've got people abroad, such as the German company that had been supplying the Zimbabwean government with the paper it was using to print its currency, no longer willing to supply them with the paper to print the currency. This, of course, is being framed as a moral gesture, a gesture of humanitarian disgust with what's going on in Zimbabwe, and I don't doubt that there are people working for that company who see it that way. But I think another issue is they just don't want to be paid in debased Zimbabwean currency. I mean, what are they going to be paid with? They're going to be paid by a government that still insists on paying its debts in a currency that's radically non-convertible. And I think that probably has as much to do as anything with what's going on there.
Well, I think really one of the most important things is to realize that our tax money is keeping Mugabe in power. Why? Well, because we give money to the United Nations. We provide probably 25% of their budget. And the United Nations is giving food to Mugabe that is being used to keep his government in power. And if you're not part of the government, you don't get any food.
Yeah.
And that's really what's going on. That, and of course, the Chinese communists who we're funding are also backing, of course, Mugabe. And, of course, recently when the United States went through the motion of being outraged and trying to bring up the issue of sanctions in the United Nations, who should be voting against sanctions but our good friends in communist China and, of course, in Russia, both of which countries we have financed, and right now we are financing. In fact, we're honoring China. In fact, our president is going over there hat in hand to praise China by being there for the opening of the Olympics, and I'm ashamed I'm ashamed that our president doesn't have the courage to stand up and say, you either stop backing the tyrannical regime in North Korea and in Burma and in Zimbabwe, or I'm not coming to your Olympics. And I bet they'd quit tomorrow, but George Bush doesn't have the intestinal fortitude to do what's right.
No, I mean, you can add that to the long roster of reasons to be ashamed of George W. Bush. He seems to add to that roster daily or perhaps even hourly, and that's certainly a very prominent and ignominious entry on that rather long list. But you're right when you talk about the fact that Zimbabwe's government is being propped up by Washington as well as by Beijing and Moscow, and of course by the United Nations, which seems to be the chief underwriter of everything evil in the world. The thing that I find so unsettling here is that one of the reasons why Mr. Bush has made that pilgrimage to Beijing is because China is in control, to a large extent, of our economic destiny by virtue of the amount of T-bills they purchased. They've been buying up our debt now. One of the larger, as a matter of fact, I think the largest single holders of the paper on U.S. debt is Beijing. And so they have the influence. When you talk about Mr. Bush going over their hat in hand, that attests to the influence that the Chinese now have with respect to calling the shots over our agenda. It's not a matter of military might. They do have a large and modernizing military system, certainly, and it benefits tremendously from the aid and trade that Washington has provided to China, being subsidized by the taxpayers, of course, through the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, Export-Import Bank. You know the whole clack.
Well, World Bank, International Monetary Fund, right, go ahead.
Exactly, that whole cohort. But the reason they're able to exercise this kind of influence over the agenda of the President of the United States is not merely the cravenness of Mr. Bush, which is a nearly inexhaustible quantity, but it also attests to the fact that they're economically ascendant, and they are the lien holders on a lot of what we do economically. The same is true of the Saudis. To a lesser extent, it's true of the Japanese. But between the Saudis and the Chinese right now, you have basically the makings of what could be the reversal of that process we've talked about of exporting inflation, because these are countries that hold a lot of the paper on the United States debt. If they simply stop buying the notes, let alone dumping them on the market, they could cause our economy to crash. And what's happening as well with respect to propping up the dollar is something that Ron Paul talked about earlier this week when there was a vote on this absolutely loathsome bill to bail out Fannie and Freddie, the two government-chartered mortgage underwriters that are the legacy of FDR's New Deal and LBJ's Great Society, and then Richard Nixon's hyper-Keynesian administration of the late 60s and early 70s. Fannie Mae was created in 1938. Freddie Mac was a spinoff of Fannie Mae that received sort of a permanent status under Richard Nixon in the early 70s. They're both government-sponsored entities, and implicitly they're backed up by the taxpayers and by the assumption that if these two mortgage underwriters, which are responsible for issuing bonds, buying up and then issuing bonds, securitizing over half of all American mortgage loans, the idea is that if they ever found themselves in a position where they were about to collapse, they're too big to fail, and they would be backed up by the American taxpayers. That was never made explicit in the charters and in the legislation governing these entities. And so you had this typical corporatist exercise. It's the same formula we talked about before. The risks are subsidized, the losses are socialized, the profits are privatized. And so if you're a political crony of people who are in a position to help, you get a role on one of these corporate boards for Fannie and Freddie, you can make out like a bandit, literally, and the taxpayers will bail you out. To the tune of trillions of dollars, we're finding out. That's what's going on right now.
I agree with you totally, and I think it's so important people understand that the United States now is taking on the responsibility for the debt of Fannie and Freddie. And, of course, you're talking of at least $5 trillion debt. We've already got, you know, between about $9.6 trillion net, $9.3 trillion debt. Then, of course, we've got another $40 trillion of things we promised. Now we're going to take on the Fannie debt. And, of course, they know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. The whole thing's going belly up. But they can't let the American people know that that's the plan, to impoverish the American people. Well, William, you go right ahead.
Yeah. The most outrageous thing about Fannie and Freddie and the way they were managed over the last 10 or 15 years is that starting in 1989, right after the SNL debacle became a matter of public discussion, and you're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars that were used to pay off the SNL debacle of the late 1980s, actually the mid-1980s, it really sort of collapsed in 1988 and became a matter of public concern and outrage in 1989. But in 1989, Congress changed the laws so as to loosen the regulatory control over Fannie and Freddie on the assumption that they were going to be playing fast and loose with their accounting methods. And lo and behold, within 4 or 5 years, as the Federal Reserve started to pump all this money and liquidity, which is to say money and credit created ex nihilo out of nothing into the markets, they pumped up first this huge bubble of what was called the dot-coms, the so-called business exploitation of the Internet, where anybody who could set up a website was able to go out and to have an IPO in the investment markets and raise money on the basis of nothing. That collapsed, of course, in 2000. And concurrently, the Federal Reserve was pumping up a real estate bubble. Mortgage and also refinancing of mortgages became one of the biggest, perhaps the biggest bubble in the history of the world, if you don't count the larger dollar bubble that this is a subset of. But in any case, during that period of time, Fannie was practicing the same type of accounting that Enron practiced and a number of other large corporations practiced that ended up with prosecutions and convictions for fraud. And one of the things they were doing was they were taking on mortgage loans that were manifestly unsuitable and unsatisfactory, because the terms had become so emancipated, because the credit was so easy to obtain, the money was so loose, people go in and perjure themselves in mortgage applications in the context of a process where the mortgage officer knew that these people were perjuring themselves, where they wouldn't do due diligence as to background and income and credit trustworthiness and all this. These mortgages were being made by the millions, and Fannie and Freddie was buying them up, securitizing them, and entering these into the books as profit on the assumption that by doing so, by making a certain profit goal, reaching a certain threshold of profitability, their stock would increase, and with the increase of their stock to a certain level, then executive bonuses would kick in. And that's how Franklin D. Raines managed to make $52.8 million just in bonuses between 1998 and 2003. It was all, of course, consummately fraudulent. Knowing fraud, you had the people who were in charge of auditing the books, the internal auditors at Fannie and Freddie, talking about the need to meet these profitability targets, not about the need to make sure that they were doing appropriate diligence in terms of what they were actually making, what these assets were actually worth. No, their chief desideratum was to make sure that they were meeting the profitability goals. And, of course, this all was, as I pointed out, knowing conscious felonious fraud. There are people in prison right now for doing exactly the same thing that the managers of Fannie and Freddie did. The biggest difference being, of course, Fannie and Freddie are government-sponsored entities. And so when they, through these types of conscious, fraudulent criminal practices, ran up huge, corrupt losses in their business model, when they managed to find themselves with liabilities far in excess of what they're able to capitalize.
I'm afraid you're going to have to hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William was simply talking about the fact that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were really using fraudulent methods of accounting, and of course they were running up tremendous liabilities, and they had no possible means by which they could counter these liabilities. Mm-hmm. There's the potential for a loss of probably close to $5 trillion that they could lose at the present time, but of course all of this is being covered up by their friends at the highest echelons of our government, and instead of course, being held responsible for the fraudulent accounting methods, why, of course, these people are given massive bonuses when they're allowed to retire. And, of course, who's going to be end up being stuck with the end result of what they've done? Why, of course, the American taxpayers. So pick up the story, William.
Yes, that's exactly the point. You've got something in excess of $5 trillion, most likely, that the taxpayers eventually are going to have to swallow here, either through outright transfer of taxpayer dollars to Fannie and Freddie, which, of course, is unlikely. I don't think they'd be able to do that. in terms of an actual transfer of revenue from the taxpayers, or more likely through the conventional means now, what's become the conventional means of having the Federal Reserve open up the discount window or otherwise monetize these losses by taking them on the Federal Reserve's books, either directly or by way of an intermediary. And this bailout bill that was just passed by the House, and apparently will be passed by the Senate tomorrow, barring some kind of an act of divine indignation, is going to create a mechanism where it would be possible, not merely in principle, but in strict black-letter legislation for the federal government directly to nationalize Fannie and Freddie. Bear in mind, once again, these are nominally private enterprises. They were never formally made part of the executive branch.
So, well, of course, that will mean that the shareholders will lose all of their investments.
Yeah, exactly.
But a lot of the reason that they're doing this is because they do not want, of course, to embarrass the bondholders. And who are the bondholders? Well, our good friends over in communist China.
Exactly.
And,
exactly,
of course, they're right in Saudi Arabia and elsewhere. So we're going to rescue them. And how are they going to do it? Why, they're simply going to have to dilute our currency even more, and by so doing, the greatest and worst tax of all time, and that is inflation. That's what they do. Monetarization means that they create the money so to pay off debts, and every time you create a new dollar, you decrease the value of the dollars that the other people hold. So pick the story up, please.
Yeah. That's exactly why I went here from talking about Mr. Bush's pilgrimage to Beijing, is the fact that China is the largest foreign owner of the bonds from Fannie and Freddie. And you've got a number of other national entities that are involved in that game. But China's head, shoulders, and pectoral muscles above everybody else in terms of holding the bonds here. So the shareholders will be crushed by this. The taxpayers will be impecuniated by this. And because the pass-through here of this inflated currency will benefit the bondholders primarily, China, the Chinese entities, the government-sponsored entities in China that have bought up the paper on Fannie and Freddie will actually do pretty well. The thing that I find interesting about this multi-layered lump of ugliness that is the bailout of Fannie and Freddie is the fact that they're still playing a little bit coy about what they intend to do. A few weeks ago, when it became clear that something was going to be done by the federal government here to ensure that Fannie and Freddie do not fail, as they say, they're already failed. They were failed entities for a long time, but would not allow them to disintegrate. I said, look, there is no logical stopping place between backstopping Fannie and Freddie, and that was the word that Paulson used a week ago last Sunday. We're going to backstop Fannie and Freddie here. So there's no logical stopping place between that and nationalization. And here, just in yesterday's Wall Street Journal, it's talking about the role that Mr. Paulson, the Treasury Secretary from the Bush regime, has played in getting Republican congressmen and senators in line behind this bailout. It says regarding the bailout package, the plan, which has been wrapped up with a broader housing bill, would temporarily allow the Treasury to extend an unspecified credit line to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Note that, unspecified credit line. That's literally a blank check. It would also follow, to continue with this Wall Street Journal story, it would also allow the government to buy equity in either company. Mr. Paulson says Treasury has no intention of using the authority, which is designed primarily to help calm markets. That, of course, is nonsense. When it talks about buying equity in the company, you're talking about nationalization. The federal government would use money from the Federal Reserve to buy equity in the company. And, of course, because nobody else is biting at this opportunity, this unique fixer-upper opportunity, to buy equity in Fannie and Freddie. Nobody wants to buy their paper here. You'd end up with a nationalized Fannie and Freddie being operated primarily here, once again, in the interest of the bondholders, which would mean, of course, our good friends over in communist China. But when Paulson talks about how Treasury has no intention of using the authority, he's being completely transparently dishonest. I mean, there's only one reason why you would put that in a bill, and that's because it would be used. You don't put something in legislation unless the government is going to use it, and anything the government is permitted to do in black-letter legislation, it will do immediately. Usually get around to doing those things it's forbidden to do by the legislation or by...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, William, go right ahead.
Yeah. I was just saying, if the government is permitted to do something in the overt, explicit language of legislation, it will do it immediately, irrespective of the assurances you get that it intends to do no such thing. I mean, we've seen that time and time again throughout our history. How many times have we been told by a president as he was asking for emergency authority that he would never use it, or he would use it only with the greatest reluctance? Well, presidents have a way of heroically overcoming their reluctance and using immediately whatever exceptional powers they're given. And those exceptional powers tend to be institutionalized. I mean, just to take one really good example that really gets under my skin, the withholding tax. This was a wartime measure, we were told. It was an exceptional, unusual, aberrant, anomalous thing, unique in our history, that suddenly the government would interpose itself between the employer and the employee and mulct the paycheck of the employee before the employee had received it. And this was being done, of course, as an exigency, because of the exigencies of wartime, and so forth. Well, now, of course, withholding is as institutionalized as any of the other things the government does to destroy our income and impecuniate the middle class and destroy our liberties. That's just part of the whole package of government right now. And as a sidebar here, I want to point out that the worst kind of withholding, the most devious and destructive form of withholding I can think of, is inflation. Because actually, before we even get our paychecks, before our paychecks are written, the Federal Reserve is already stealing the value of the dollars in which we will be paid. That value is being withheld and destroyed by the Federal Reserve before we have the privilege of having the federal government withhold part of our paycheck in order to pay for the operating costs of the government, the Social Security system, and so forth. But when, of course, you have a Federal Reserve that's already inflating the currency, and when that's the primary means of financing government operations, government doesn't really require another revenue stream. So these other things are being done for the purposes of social regimentation. But I digress. We're talking about Henry Paulson's plan for the bailout. Well, it's not his plan, but he's the fellow who gets to have his name attached to this. Henry Paulson's plan for bailing out Fannie and Freddie, and how the one key provision here that I really focused on, actually there are two. The first is that it extends an unspecified credit line from the federal government to Fannie and Freddie, which means it's a blank check. And we're talking, of course, once again, liabilities of up to $5 trillion. You have an unspecified credit line. We might as well admit right now we're talking about a $5 trillion credit line. The other element of this is really important is the fact that it provides for the federal government directly to buy equity in these companies.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with William Grigg at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is William Grigg, and he's simply pointing out that new housing bill is simply a blank check, and the specifications there that they can really, of course, spend all the money that they want. There's no limitation on it. How many of you would give a blank check to a politician and say, well, you spend this responsibly? And you'd say, that's the most ridiculous thing in the world I ever heard. But that is exactly what this legislation is about. That and the fact that they want, of course, to fingerprint everybody who's working in the mortgage industry. And as Ron Paul said, how many people really believe that the housing industry has collapsed because we did not fingerprint the people in the mortgage industry?
Exactly.
Anyway, right. I mean, there's just so many ridiculous things in that legislation, but you're never going to hear them discussed on television or on radio because, of course, they don't want you to realize what they're doing. We are basically giving the Federal Reserve that's created the problem a blank check to solve the problem, and it's only going to make it worse. Go right ahead.
The thing that I find really amazing about this is that the biggest thieves, of course, are the ones who run the system to begin with. I mean, counterfeiting is a form of fraud. It's kind of theft. You probably saw that really weird news story, Dr. Stan, out of Florida about the couple who went to withdraw their money from a Wachovia bank, and they ended up receiving 10 counterfeit $100 bills. Did you see that story?
No, I really didn't.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting because everything the bank would hand out by way of Federal Reserve notes would be de facto counterfeit, not de jure. I mean, de jure counterfeit means that it's unauthorized counterfeit currency. It's not the officially sanctioned counterfeit currency being put up by the Federal Reserve. This is something somebody else put into the system. But this couple received 10 counterfeit $100 bills, and then a couple of weeks ago, or a few months ago rather, there was another depositor who had withdrawn a rather large amount of money. And she reportedly received a couple of counterfeit $100 bills. So it's sort of a repeat incident. It's no longer something that's an anomaly now, it may be a coincidence or something more sinister. But one of the things that people said by way of commenting on this is, you know, if you have banks in the business of putting out actual counterfeit money, if they've actually got this in the money stream right now, that might suggest that there are really desperate measures being taken by some of these banks who are really overstretched in terms of meeting depositor demand, and the fact that the banks have stopped lending money to each other. That's one possibility. But the thing is, as I pointed out, the bigger problem here is the counterfeit money that the Federal Reserve issues with the imprimatur of the federal government here, meaning that we are required to use it as legal tender in spite of the fact that it's backed up by nothing. What Ron Paul said regarding this whole mechanism of bailing out Fannie and Freddie here, because we're talking about the possibility, the likelihood, I would consider it to be the inevitability of nationalizing these entities here for the benefit of the bondholders primarily, and also just because this would be another contingency that would be used in order to prevent or to forestall the complete collapse of the banking system, is that what is now going to be behind the dollar, in fact, is going to be this bad paper on these bad mortgage loans. We're in a position right now where if the government actually buys out Fannie and Freddie, you've got a dollar that's backed by bad mortgages. And the petrodollar arrangement, which has been basically the means whereby the dollar has maintained its status as the reserve currency of the world, is something that will continue, but will probably not continue much longer. I mean, that was the accord that was created in the 1970s between Washington and Riyadh, where the Saudis accepted the dollar for petroleum, and as the dominant member of the OPEC cartel, they're able to create this system where, because the dollar is good to buy oil, then the dollar retains that value because it's accepted for oil. So oil is the de facto reserve behind the fiat dollar. And now you have people starting to flake off from this petrodollar accord, beginning with Kuwait, and you see Venezuela and Iran and a number of other major oil-producing countries no longer being part of the petrodollar entente. And so now what's going on, Ron Paul pointed out a couple of days ago, is that we're actually entering a really bizarre phase of the meltdown of our fiat currency, where it will have to be good because the dollar is backed up essentially by all these nationalized assets having to do with the collapsing, overblown mortgage and real estate industry. And it's a really bizarre, but I think inevitable result of what the Federal Reserve did over the last 15 or 20 years in pumping up that real estate bubble. But by way of illustrating just how bad the system is right now in terms of the system-wide pandemic fraud that these banks are involved in, there are two really interesting stories. The one is what we mentioned before has to do with the collapse of the IndyMac Bank in California, which was a major mortgage originator. It collapsed over the course of a week because of the bad mortgages on its books. And over the weekend, it was nationalized by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, or FDIC. And I don't know how things look down there right now, but up until a few days ago, you had still the spectacle of these lines of people queuing up to get their money out, depositors who didn't want to be stuck in a bad place because of the collapse of the IndyMac Bank, now the IndyMac Federal Bank. And so a lot of these depositors were receiving what? They were receiving large cashier's checks that they could take and deposit in other banks that they considered to be more sound and more solvent. The problem is these cashier's checks, excuse me, from the IndyMac Federal Bank, which were issued under the putative authority of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, aren't really being accepted by these other banks. There were two or three stories of people taking their cashier's checks to Wells Fargo or Bank of America or some of these other institutions and being told that there would be an eight-week or longer hold on these cashier's checks issued by this FDIC-backed bank in California, which is a terrible thing because we're coming up now on, of course, that time of the year when property taxes are due in a lot of places. People have fees that they have to pay. They have mortgage payments to make. They've got school coming up pretty soon. There are expenses attendant to that. They're just basic living expenses that people have to make. If suddenly they don't have access to their savings because this federally issued check isn't going to be honored for 8 weeks, they're in just as bad a shape as they would be if they had to wait for 8 weeks to get their money out of this bank that is failing. And that, I think, is a real indictment of the system right now, because these people on the receiving end of this federal paper, these federal federally-backed cashier's checks, seem to have some intuitive understanding of the fact that this is not a sound system. In other words, if there's an eight-week gap to make sure that the money is there, then obviously there's a real problem that the people who are in the know are privy to, and we ought to pay attention to that as a leading economic indicator. Here's another one. There's a news item out of Australia. The National Australia Bank has decided to write off 90% of what are called its U.S. conduit loans, 90% of its loans, will write off as bad. The NAB, the National Australia Bank, says that it is suffering a 55% loss on American housing loans. How did NAB get caught in $1.2 billion of a mess? This is an Australian news piece I'm reading. They had a number of big clients who wanted to invest in these U.S. housing loans. They were sucked in by the AAA rating given to the securities by the rating agencies. They did not take into account that the monoline insurers who guaranteed some of the loans had no substance. To become a player, NAB took out $1.2 billion in these AAA securities, and 90% of it has been lost. And so, running the math here, this article concludes that U.S. banks have written down $450 billion in bad housing loans. The revelation from NAB means that they will now certainly need to make provisions to $1 trillion. But write-downs of $1.3 trillion and perhaps even more are on the cards. Once again, this illustrates the extent to which this whole system is rotten. At the very least, according to this experience, and I don't think that this is purely anecdotal. I think this is more typical because these were AAA securities, supposedly, that this Australian bank had invested in. Over half of them are bad. And they've written off 90% of them on the assumption that looking at what's coming down the pipe, they're probably 9 out of 10 of them are going to go bad. You're talking here about a system that is so consummately rotten that there's just simply no way that it can sustain itself. And all of this, of course, our government is now prepared to nationalize and subsidize, not only through the revenue that would be extracted at us at gunpoint, extracted from us, rather, at gunpoint through taxation, but also through inflation. And so, really, once again, I advert anew to what's going on in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe has a perfectly demented and delirious ruler who's run a Marxist system of almost Simon-pure stupidity, destroying the economy of what had been one of the most prosperous nations in that part of the world, and in doing so has run up inflation rates of 2.5 million percent a year. But they didn't have the type of debts that Washington has managed to inflict upon us and inflict upon the world. And when Ron Paul, once again this week, he reiterated his warning that there is a, quote, major economic event coming. That's something he said a couple of weeks ago. He reiterated this just a couple of days ago after the vote on the Fannie and Freddie nationalization package. And I think he's, like you and I, Dr. Stan, thinking of what is likely to happen in September, late September, early October, when the counting has to be made for this fiscal year and bottom lines have to be checked and reality has to be taken into account. I'm really fearful over what's likely to happen then, because there are a lot of trend lines that converge on that time of year, and chances are we're looking at America finally slipping over the event horizon into this economic black hole that we've discussed on a couple of occasions.
I really think with him that it's the most important thing is the other countries that are holding massive amounts of American debt. If those countries ever start to unload their dollars, why, the whole house of cards comes tumbling down. Those dollars come back to the United States,
yeah,
produce massive inflation, and with that, of course, will come the collapse of everything. Inflation is the vehicle by which you destroy nations, and
mm-hmm,
of course, and this is what people do not understand. We're already inflating at probably about 1%. a month. Certainly, if you go to shadowstatistics.com, shadowstatistics.com, John Woodham's material, points out the real inflation rate. The government's lying. The real inflation rate's about 12.5% at the present time. M3 is at 17 to 18%, which reflects inflation 6 to 8 months from now. I mean, stop and think of what you're talking about. You're talking about the loss of 1% of the value of your currency every single month, and before long it'll be 1.5% or more. So go right ahead.
Yeah. The persistent, it usually is slow, and as insidious as slow poison, but the persistence of inflation, of course, is what undermines the middle class. You have to have stability in your currency and the value of what you earn and the value of what you save, because savings is the fundament of a middle-class society. I will repeat that. It is savings that is the fundament of a middle-class society. How do you define the middle class? The middle class is defined by upward social and economic mobility, on the assumption that your children will do better than you did, that they will have more than you had, and that their prospects will be better than yours. That's one of the reasons why America was able to accomplish what it did. We created the middle class. We really were the first legitimately bourgeois nation, where you had people who were yeoman farmers or artisans or shopkeepers, merchants, who were not beholden to a liege lord, who were not part of a fiefdom, people who owned property, who owned property and capital, and by owning what they had and being able to develop it and improve upon it, and then to take the surplus that they had earned and invest it in vehicles that would yield to the benefit of their offspring, they were able to cultivate this self-replicating middle class. And this is something that really was destroyed in principle way back in the New Deal. I think the fundamental purpose of the Social Security system was to destroy this idea of connecting the generations in what you could call an informal capitalist covenant, because suddenly the government would take care of the parents and their dotage, or that was the conceit in any case, is that the government would provide for the gentle decline of the parents. The children would not have to pay that service to their parents. And, of course, the concomitant measure would be all the programs that were started in the Great Society to take care of children in their infancy. So suddenly the parents didn't have to take care of the children. The children didn't have to take care of their parents. And all these ways that the government was using to usurp the role of the family were being funded by fiat currency that was undermining the value of what we made. And so people would not only have an incentive to turn over these duties to the government, they were put in an economically untenable position if they didn't, in most instances. We've reached a crisis point in our civilization, what passes for it, half a generation or longer ago, when suddenly you had to have both parents out of the home in order to sustain a family. You had to have one parent out working out in the home, outside the home, in order to pay for the family expenses, and the other parent outside the home to pay the taxes that were imposed upon the family. And that means, of course, you've got the children being raised by rented strangers, usually rented strangers operating either with a government license or operating through a government entity. But the way that the middle class was supposed to operate was that the middle class would be an autonomous thing. The middle class family would be able to take money that would retain its value and use that money in order to develop something that would be transmissible to the heirs, not only a family business or a family farm, a family shop, but you'd have an investment you could pass along to your children. You'd be able to make a sufficient living that you could provide your children with a bequest that they could use in order to improve their circumstances. And, of course, now it's almost impossible to find somebody who actually inherits property or money or something of worth from parents unless they're already very well-to-do to begin with. I mean, if you're somebody whose last name was Bush or Rockefeller or Carnegie or something like that, Ford, chances are if you're the legatee of one of these super-rich families wired into the power elite, then you're doing just fine. But if you're somebody who's simply trying to make an honest living and trying to earn and save and through thrift and enterprise make a better life for your family, inflation is the thing that cuts the legs right out from under your effort. And that's why, of course, economists have long recognized, and sociologists were a little bit tardy to understand that, but they came to this understanding, at least the most more astute of them did, that the inflation is the bane of the middle class. And if you want to do away with the middle class, which is, of course, the grand objective of all collectivist enterprises, whether socialist, Marxist, National Socialist, or fascist. You want to do away with the middle class, the most efficient way to do it is through inflation. And that's why all of these trend lines, once again, can be traced back to the maleficent entity called the Federal Reserve. I mean, it makes perfect sense when you understand that that's the objective. They want to do away with the middle class. They want to crush the middle class. That's like the rallying cry of the French Revolution was crush the wretch. And they were talking about the Catholic Church, but they were talking about Catholics. They were talking about the people who were the adherents of this religion, this worldview that was their equivalent to the bourgeois here in the United States.
Well, our guest this evening has been William McQuigg. William, let's quickly get out your blog space. How can people get your blog space?
Pro Libertate is the name of the blog. Go to rightsourceonline.com. That's one word, rightsourceonline.com. It's about a third of the way down the page on the left-hand side of the screen. You'll find the link to my blog.
That's the rightsource.com?
Rightsourceonline.com.
All right, fine. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program. And let me recommend William's blog site to you and his book, of course, Liberty and Eclipse, excellent source of information. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, William, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up tonight's program.
Well, I need to reiterate, as I have on many occasions, that in light of what's going on in the economy, we have to think about the fundamentals of survival before we do anything else. That means you have to have the means to acquire, or rather, you should already acquired, but you should have the means to acquire sufficient food, shelter, clean water, and security in the form of association with like-minded people who will have your back. I mean, we're reaching a point in our decline where it's important that somebody is watching your six. That means if you can, please get close to your family. If you have the means of moving closer to family, do it right now. We did it a couple of years ago because we understood how bad things were going to get and how soon they were going to get that way. It's a very important thing right now. Remember that story, a clean, well-lighted place. Your home is that place where if you go there, they have to take you in. That's the way families are. Get out of debt if you possibly can. Minimize your debts by all means necessary. Live radically within your means right now because your means are very soon going to be severely constricted by the inflation we're talking about. If you have the means to do so, buy survival foods that you will use and start using them. That's what my family has started to do. Get out of dollar-denominated assets. If you have money above assets over $100,000, the FDIC limit, get them out of the bank. Get your money into hard, transmissible, convertible currency. That means primarily gold and silver. Don't ignore the other noble metal, which is lead. I hate to speak in terms of that sort, but we're reaching a point, once again, in a decline where you have to think about the preservation of your household. Get close to your family and by every means possible get closer to God. Things are going to get rough. We're going to have a lot of the pretenses stripped away. We're going to find what we're really made of. And in moments of that sort, we learn that what really matters in the ultimate sense is who God is and how you please him. Those are the most important questions that we can contemplate in any time. But in times of this sort, those questions are imperative to address.
And, of course, one thing I've learned, and I've been around for a good many years, but fear God and keep his commandments. And if you obey that, then do what he says.
The whole duty of man.
Amen to that. And, of course, this is really the solution we're involved in, a spiritual battle being played on a political, ideological, cultural, financial, economic battlefield. But it is still a spiritual battle, and William brings that out so well. Well, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And we'll look forward to talking to you again next week. And these were certainly exciting times.
Yes, they are.
Good night. God bless.
God bless.
Bye-bye. Okay, this is Dr. Stan, our guest William McQuigg. Hope you enjoyed what he has to say, because he's certainly one of the most articulate spokesmen we have, and we're really privileged to have him here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners out there that we're primarily listener-supported. We don't have any major foundations or millionaires behind this. We have just people out there, common people who really believe in what we're talking about. And, of course, you may not even be in a position to help, but you can always tell others about our programs and encourage them to go to our website at radioliberty.com or get some of our tapes and copy them or pass out flyers. In fact, we're sending a flyer out with our latest newsletter. We hope that you'll copy it and pass it out at the local mall or at the grocery store or at your church or wherever, pointing people and suggesting they listen to Radio Liberty. Our audience is increasing in size. We're fortunate that God's given us a wonderful opportunity to reach people, and certainly we have outreach across America, which I take no credit for. God has certainly helped us at every step of the way. And if you can help us, fine. If you can't, we'll understand. But if you can, why give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you want to understand the finances of what's going on today, why, let me suggest the talk we gave called The Financial Tsunami. It comes with a syllabus. We gave it about 2 years ago, but it's as true today as it was then. The book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, and the book, The Fiat Money, Inflation in France, written 100 years ago by Andrew Dickinson White. We have two little pamphlets. One is called The History of Money. That's The History of Money. They're only very inexpensive. But we have one called The Financial Meltdown. We suggest you go up on our webpage and read our newsletters there, and certainly put them in three-ring binders. And, of course, you can always get the three-ring binders and get them bound from us if you want to. But you can do it yourself, there on our website. You can listen to our radio programs. You can watch our videos. They're all free. You can go down to the section we have, the exciting new section entitled The Other Videos, and my son's posted all sorts of fascinating material up there, including a number of speeches and the interviews with Congressman Ron Paul, which are well worthwhile listening to because he has so much important information for us. And then, of course, we do hope many of you will want to get our material on the spiritual battle. The three pamphlets set the occult hierarchy. They're inexpensive, but the three pamphlets, part one, part two, part three, things I've written and things that Dr. Dennis Cuddy has written about, this esoteric group, this group of people who really run the world, and, of course, the influence that they have on the people of great wealth in our world. That's the occult hierarchy. You want to hear our talk on the forbidden secrets? You want to hear our talk on secret knowledge? You want to hear our talk on the planned police state? And get the syllabus that goes with that. And then you'll want to get the talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, which gives you the overall view of what's really going on, and that there has to be an explanation for what's going on there. How are we going to understand it? Well, you're going to understand that there are too many clues that point to all sorts of directions just designed to confuse you. And once you've read the Brotherhood of Darkness, you'll see how it all fits together. Actually, we carry a number of books for research. They're not listed in our catalog, but books by Manly B. Hall, who was a Satanist, and books by Wayne Peterson, who was actually recruited into the government service by a man named David Rockefeller. And, of course, Wayne Peterson claims that he's seen the Lord. He's seen Maitreya, the Christ. And, of course, it's not Jesus Christ at all, but, of course, he and a group of people are living over in Henderson, Nevada, waiting for the return of the Christ, but not the Christ that we're waiting for. Understand that the other side has a holy trinity, and it, of course, is the Satan. It is the Antichrist and the false prophet, the counterpart of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Everything they do is the mirror image of Christianity. They have the Earth Charter. And what's the Earth Charter? That's the new Ten Commandments. And they keep it in the Ark of Hope, the Luciferian counterpart of the Ark of the Covenant. So understand what this is about. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then please pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.